stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing the second interview that I've done with Gail Fulton Ross. I interviewed Gail back in 2009 about what she's best known for, and that is for being a fine artist, a very fine artist. In today's interview, we are talking about the fact that Gail has found her way back to what was her first love, the written word. And she will tell some stories about how she began to write very, very young, but then was dissuaded from writing and shifted her creative energy into the visual arts. So, listening to Gail, you hear what it means to be committed to being who you are. It's a very interesting and intriguing story, so hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being who you really are so that you can live the life you were meant to live. As I say in every show, in case this is the first show you're hearing, as a therapist, I believe that most of us have come out of childhood living out what I call our cover stories. This is a version of who we are. It's the truth, but it's not the whole truth of who we are. In fact, most of us have been encouraged to hide some significant aspects of ourselves, some ways of being that were natural to us, some skills, some talents, some impulses, some ideas. When we're little, we really, in my view, only have one agenda, and that is to please the giants on whom our life depends, that is, our parents. Later, it becomes important to please our peers, our teachers, our culture, our religion. And If our parents or our peers or our teachers or our culture or our religion frowns on something that is natural to us, then we really want not to have that. If the way we talk, the ideas that we have, our natural, the tone of our voice, the our interest in dancing or singing or drawing or humming, right? Our interest in reading or our desire to tap dance or somersault. If our parents or our peers or our school or our culture or our religion thinks that this is not appropriate, maybe not for a little girl, should not be doing somersaults, or a little boy should not be interested in color or fashion. Maybe it's not thought to be appropriate across the board. Doesn't matter whether you're a boy or a girl. You are not to, you know the old thing about children should be seen and not heard. We think that that's old-fashioned, but in fact, lots of parents treat their children that way. So children are discouraged from speaking up, speaking their voice, telling their truth. Let's say you make a mistake. Let's say you use the wrong word, or you pronounce a word in a bad way. If you pronounce a word inaccurately and you are teased, then you might remember, be reluctant to try new words. You might be reluctant to risk the teasing. Of course, it depends. If you get teased once, well, probably it's not a big deal. But if you come from a family that delights in teasing, in sarcasm, then you might very well find, you might decide you don't like to read. You're not interested in English. That it's a boring subject. You don't need all these words. I mean, there are dozens and dozens of ways in which sometimes the most casual comment, but certainly comments that are mentioned over and over, if a particular way of being brings a consequence that you really don't like, then what all children do is attempt to hide that. I'm really not a loud person. I really don't have that cackle laugh. You know, I keep my mouth shut. I don't even smile, right? Well, the problem with this is that while we start out pretending that we don't have it, over time we actually forget that we have this quality, whatever it is. And so our later life is diminished by the number of things we have had to pretend we don't have. You know, they call it denial, right? I believe that denial is a gift of the unconscious. We go into denial for things which are too unpleasant, too difficult, too embarrassing, too dangerous to demonstrate. So while denial has a very bad rap, I actually think it is a self-protective mechanism created by our unconscious to protect us from some unpleasant outcome. And so we create this cover story, which is, as I said, a limited version of who we are. And the limits depend on how many things we were discouraged from being when we were children. Some people are so limited, so much of who they naturally are is hidden, and I call this undercover, that they seem stulted, anxious, and they can seem boring, really, because so much of what is real about them is undercover. Now, the good news about this, as I see it, is that those things which we have hidden are, in fact, undercover, but they are not gone. They are not visible, even to us, but they are still there. And the message of the Lynn Show is that should you become aware that there is a quality, an idea, a way of being, a talent, an interest, a fantasy that you have hidden, that you would like to have back, that you would like to have access to, that you can see that in your life would benefit from being able to use this, whatever it is, then please know that it is still there. It isn't gone. And while it is still there, and this is the caveat, this is the caution, because you had a very good reason for hiding it, denying it, giving it up, should you decide to reclaim it, the reasons that you decided to hide it will almost certainly make themselves known. So it's not so simple as to say, oh, wow, I hid my ability to stand up for myself and tell my truth and speak my voice, and I'm going to get that back. Watch me now. Here, you know, I'm going to tell my boss that he's been unfair to me and I really deserve the raise that he gave to somebody else. I'm going to tell my mother that I really don't like it when she tells other people things I tell her. And I'm going to tell my father or my sister or my teacher or, you know, I'm going to do that. Well, my guess is that you will find that it's not so simple. There's a process to recovery. And the process is, of course, one of the things that psychotherapy is best at, the process of recovery, recovering those things that we have hidden. You see this, I see, this comes up a lot in couples, that one or both of them are hiding some quality. And it is necessary for that to be surfaced, for the marriage to really be good. In any case, if you think there is something that you have hidden that you are interested in recovering, you might think about checking out psychotherapy. And of course, you can check it out with me. I do all my work on the phone these days. And you can email me if you're interested in finding out what psychotherapy on the phone is like. You can email me about that or about anything else, anything I've said in these shows, anything you've heard in these shows. And you can do that by going up on my website, thelynnshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E, don't leave the E out of Lynn, S-H-O-W, thelynnshow.com. And on the website, there's an article called Psychotherapy on the Go, which you can read about therapy on the phone if you don't want to talk to me about it. There's also a copy of my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It, in which I talk about cover story and undercover and the recovery process. And in addition to that, on the website are the podcasts of all of my previous shows, which include all of my previous interviews, including the one you're going to hear today. And the one you're going to hear today is with Gail Fulton Ross. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are, so that you are living the life that you were really meant to live. And Gail Fulton Ross is a glorious example of someone who discovered very, very young that she was an artist. She is a person who turns her ideas, her thoughts, her fantasies, her instincts into glorious pieces of art, and who is now working on turning her creativity into words on paper. Gail Fulton Ross is someone who is so gloriously herself. It's in every word she says, and it's in everything that she produces. And I know you'll hear it as I hear it while I'm listening to her. And as I always say, it is my hope that you will listen to Gail and be inspired to look into your own soul, your own heart, your own inner being, your own undercover, so that you too can be all that you are. But now, Gail Fulton Ross.
Okay, I am here with Gail Fulton Ross. When I last saw Gail, she had a tiny little space on Siesta Key. And now she's in this huge space, which is appropriate because she is huge. It's extraordinary what you create, both in, not only just in quality, but in quantity, and not only in quantity, but in variety. I mean, it's like there's nothing you don't do. No, I know. So I'd like you to, I suppose primarily I'd like you to talk about the book for now.
Okay.
Everybody knows you as a visual artist.
Yes.
That has been, as far as I can tell, your identity, and certainly everybody who knows you knows your work, right? And that you create in every possible way there is visually, right? So I know I was intrigued. I don't want to say I was surprised because for me you are just an extraordinarily, you're a creative engine, right? So you began to tell me that you always wanted to write. Would you start there?
Yes.
Good.
I did always want to write. Before I was dedicated to drawing and painting, I liked the written word. And as a little girl, along with my coloring books, which many people have heard the story that in order to get me to go outside and play, my mother would put coloring books on the porch. And then that once I got outside, then I would engage with my playmates and go do hide and seek, but you had to get me out there first. Mm-hmm. One Christmas, because I used to write in a little journal.
How old?
I was, let's say 6, 7, the earliest that you could really think.
So you began putting down, really, you began to be putting down words at 6 or 7?
Yes, because I'm sure a psychologist would have a field day with this, but a lot of it was, I had a decent childhood, I'm not complaining about that, but my parents did not have a happy marriage. Mm. And because they weren't having a happy marriage, the arguing forced me to go more inside of myself.
Right.
And we lived on a street called 12 Steves Court. And so I started a journal called 12 Steves Court. And I would write about the characters who lived at 12 Steves Court. And so my father gave me a little green Tom Thumb typewriter.
Really?
And I had a typewriter by 8 years old, and I would just click away on this typewriter about 12 Steves Court. However, when it was discovered what I was writing about, my mother was not very happy because it tended to make her look kind of
unattractive.
Especially the parts where it said, I wish I could live in a crack in the floor. We had hardwood floors. And then it would go on and on about just how I would set it up, where how my room would look, and I'd make sure that I had everything I need, but I would squirrel it away from the house and go into this crack.
Right.
Kind of floor.
Yeah.
High. So they decided to give me more opportunity to paint, and I sort of moved away from the words on the paper.
Are you saying, it seems to me you are saying, that your mother's distress about what you were writing
ended it,
yeah.
Yes.
This whole thing of the impact of family on creativity.
There's no, listen, everything I do probably
dates back
to a lot.
To something. Yeah, yeah, no, I think that's true for all of us. So we had a budding novelist.
Yes.
But we got an artist.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. And since I loved them, both the writing and the drawing, probably at that time equally, both of them were escapes. So no matter how you look at it, I was escaping the situation. And as long as, you know, both of them weren't removed, I was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Tom Thumb went in a closet. I have no idea where my where the writing went. I'm
yeah,
sure my
you
mother,
read my mind. Yeah. I was just going to ask.
Because I was keeping it hidden, too. My mom found it, and that was the end. I never saw it again. Okay. However, writing never has never left me. And friends will say that when I write them letters or when I write in a way I'm responding to something, they always say, you're a writer.
Yeah.
And I'd say, yeah, there's a part of me that's a writer. But when I look at my the book I'm writing, which is called Art as a Novel, I'm still being what I think is a visual artist, but I'm interpreting things instead of with marks as one does with a brush or a pencil. I'm interpreting them, the images I want, via the word.
Right.
The word as tool, the word as brush, the word as color. I am not sure that I have more than one book in me. So, you know, I hesitate to call myself an author. Also, the book is still in play in that it is still being written. It's actually being rewritten. There's 350 words, 27 chapters, all established, all characters pretty much, you know, figured out. And now all I'm trying to do is put away a block of time to finish it.
Yeah, I hear that.
Just that, and that's probably every first-time writer's lament, to find the time.
Well, it may be, you know, I anticipated you and I said no, but I need to say to you who are listening and are not here to see what I see. I want to guess that there are few people who create the quantity of work that Gail creates in every possible visual form. I think now is a good time to talk about the turning of the art into textile and into clothing and into pocketbooks and into interior decorators' dreams of pillows and curtains and tableware. And right. So
Home goods,
exactly. right. So all of these things require not only your incredible talent and creativity, but physical time.
Yes.
Not everybody is producing 24/7, you know, and therefore has to steal time from one creative endeavor to another.
Yes.
You know, I imagine you had in mind when you said first-time author that people have full-time jobs.
Yes.
And so that, you know, but what you have is not a full-time job.
No.
In the sense that other people go to work and then they come home and they have their evenings.
Yes.
Is that an airplane?
Yes.
Ah.
We're not far from the airport.
Okay. All right. That's a plane. Yes.
That's a plane.
Right. But I imagine you to be working 24/7, either physically or creatively inside you.
And that's true.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it's
true. Yeah, there is no doubt about that. It was beginning to even disturb me, and then I realized that it doesn't disturb me because I delight.
Of course, it is
in
you.
It all. It is me.
It is you.
Yeah.
So for you to write means you have to stop doing something else.
Yes.
Right. It's a conscious choice.
It's a conscious choice. But to me, it is my whole life, from the first drawing I've ever done as a child, to the paintings I'm doing now, to the sculpture I'm doing now, to the book I'm doing now, is one piece
I believe
of
you.
Art.
Yes. It is the art of Gail.
Exactly.
Right?
You sort of stop action on one to go to the next part of the same giant piece of work. Now, in the art world, that is called an artist's body of work. In my case, I'm going to keep them hopping from one foot to the other while they figure out who I was. Because I like figurative art. I love abstract art. I love design. I love the written word. I cannot sing, I'm an okay dancer, but if I thought I could do those, I'd try it. I have acted. I've been in a movie, and I've done work at the Oslo, and I love it. Only, again, as an extension of trying to absolutely find out who I am for myself.
Yeah.
So if I'm working on that, which I am all the time, it's much easier and much more fun to do it creatively. This is how I think, creatively.
It's for me, it's like you are making tangible everything that you are.
Yes.
This
true.
It's extraordinary, really. Yeah. Some people are able to make tangible pieces of themselves. Mm-hmm. They write some poetry. They doodle.
Yes.
They act,
yes.
You know. But to be someone with all of what you are, and to be committed to putting it all out there in whatever form, mm-hmm. I think it's extraordinary.
Thank you.
Just extraordinary.
My mother calls it deep. She'll say, Gail, she's deep.
Is there a slight sarcasm in there?
Yes.
Yes. Because you, yeah, that's right. She couldn't control you.
No.
She couldn't control you.
That's
right.
And that's the, again, going back to my early years, the teachers would make comments. They would send notes home to my mother. Gail's a very good student. They would say that Gail's conduct is a problem. And the conduct was that I liked, when I finished my work, I was ready to move to the next thing. So I would say, okay, what do you want me to do now? And when they didn't have something for me to do, they'd say, read, which I would do, but I would also entertain the student next to me in conversation. And I remember my mother, and you know, at her wit's end, you know, I was going to be on punishment if I did not
stop it,
control myself.
Oh, God.
So in learning how to control myself, I learned how to spend a lot of time thinking about what I'm going to do as opposed to speaking about what I
right.
wanted to do or how I wanted to do it. And then the next phase of that was they started to say I had a problem with authority. And that was because after I had to figure out that I could not speak about what it is I wanted to do, or engage the next student, you know, about what we're going to do after this, or have fun, I would get a little quiet. So when the teacher wanted me to do something, I'd say, no, I'm working on this. I'm not ready for what you want me to do, because I'm over here now. But as soon
doing,
as I finish,
right, doing essentially what you told me to do, right.
I'll get right to it. So then I had this problem with authority. I think what I've done is found a way to make everybody happy with me while I'm evolving. So that is sort of the way I think I live my life. I'm the oldest of 9 children, grew up with 5, four were by my father after, and I grew up with 4, I'm sorry, 5 were of my father's afterwards, and it meant that I became responsible for a lot of people. And I don't seem to have a problem with it, except on those days it interferes with my own life. And I'm even learning how to fix that. That's a process. So if all of our lives are a process, and it is, the way I look at mine is I work every day doing absolutely what I love. God knows I do not make the money people think I do. I've asked the universe to allow me to pay my bills, take care of the people I love, including myself, and that is what I do. So I don't wake up in the morning and decide, is today the book, is today a painting, is today... It never works that way, because then that would become too rigid. I wake up in the morning, I walk into this studio, which is 4,000 square feet, with a loading dock. I greet the morning, and as I come in, this studio tells me what I'm going to work on today.
I love this.
However, I could do the same thing when I had a studio that was 1,100 square feet. And as I go forward in life, I'm preparing myself for a two-bedroom apartment, and one bedroom is where I'll do design work and where I will write. And that is not that far away. I'm closer to 70 than I am 60. And I now have a granddaughter in Los Angeles and my son and his wife, and that is where I'm going to live. So the studio that we're in now, as much as I love it, I have loved every studio I've ever had, even the one that was in my room. The first one I had in New York, that all I had was an efficiency. And I woke up and hit my head on the drafting table and I went to work. Every studio I've always loved. So people say, how can you walk away from this? I'm only walking away from this building. I don't own it.
No, and you can't walk away from what you do.
I don't walk.
You can't
away.
Walk away. You don't walk away from Gail.
No,
and that's all this is.
That's all this is.
Yeah.
So I will downsize like everyone else, but I will not give up the work, and I will work differently. And
it doesn't matter, because you'll wake up every morning, and you'll ask your unconscious or the universe or the room you're in or whatever
yes.
it is, what am I doing now? And it'll give you an answer, and you'll do that.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I know. What's so interesting to me is how they couldn't stop you. You know what I mean? I mean, everybody tried.
Mm-hmm. Husbands, too.
Ah, yes. Well, I'm not surprised.
It's a sad case.
Yes, well, but I'm not surprised, because you aren't, I can't think of the word, all I can think of is regular.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? I mean, you're not what people expect. You don't fit the mold. You can't, and people really don't know what to do with that except to try and force you into the mold.
Yeah. Even though they're initially...
intrigued
by the Fulton Ross they meet and see or the work, but then they don't understand that it takes a lot of time.
It's going to come first.
And it comes first.
Yeah, I know. But still, I mean, I'm not thinking about today or the husband. I'm thinking about what they did to you as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of children would have just gone... would have stopped,
yes.
Would have said, this is too hard, the price is too great, I can't, every time I'm me, somebody criticizes me, yells at me, punishes me, embarrasses me, but you didn't.
No.
Do you know why?
Yes.
Are you okay? Good.
It's called spirit.
Ah, yes.
You don't know these things as a child, but let's talk about the good stuff in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised in the Baptist church. There was a church in Malden, Massachusetts, where I was a kid, called Emmanuel Baptist Church. Now, I am no longer Baptist in that sense. However, that church, the preacher, the deacons, the women of the church, taught me how to believe in something bigger than myself. Now, bigger than myself then was God. in heaven, and then there would be evil called the devil. However, there were words that I heard as a child that I have never forgotten. One of them, one nice saying is, people who love you will let you down. Human beings, by the very nature of us being human beings, will let you down without malice,
they can't help
without intention.
Right?
You cannot put your faith in a human being. I don't know why that stuck with me as a child, but it did. And the other thing was the golden rule. If you let go of everything except the golden rule, you will have a wonderful life. And the golden rule was, do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Not wait until you see how they treat you to decide how to do unto them.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
So as I matured and I got older, no matter what happened, I mean, and I have been, I've had tragedies, life is life and death. I've had all kinds of situations, even where I've put myself in situations that could have changed the whole way I move through life. I have always had the ability to just sit for a moment, just sit, before I make the step that takes me left or right, and say, I can't do this by myself. And when I do that, it's not about the man sitting to the right of me asking me to do something, or, you know, my family, or anybody. I hear it. I have the ability to listen to the spirit that is within me. And for some reason, I was born that way. The creativity that I have is not my own. I've walked into people's homes, seen work. Initially, I say, that looks like something I... And then I realize, that's my work. Do I remember even laying the brush to the canvas? No. Because I am motivated by something bigger. And with that, when you realize that faith and spirit are you, bigger than you, stronger energy than you, I know there's evil in the world. We all know it. I just don't bring it into my creative space because I am motivated by these things. So I work hard to create the world I want to live in. My figures have dignity because that's what I think all human beings should have. In the beginning of their life and the end of their life, there should be dignity. Whatever they did in the middle, there should be dignity. In my abstracts, it's color and form and energy and all that's bothering me. And I pour the paint and I brush the paint and I broom the paint until it's all gone. It's gone. And what's left are marks. These marks are my marks. 45 years as an artist allows me to have a certain kind of mark that becomes mine. That's it. When I sculpt the clay, the coolness of it, the difficulty of it, the manipulation of it, that is how I'm trying to fix myself. I often say, you know, I wish I had more shoulders. Well, I give my clay sculptures more, the figures have more souls. You know, so there's nothing I don't do that doesn't have some level of me trying to be me. But it also allows me to understand that, you know, when I have contention around me or misunderstanding, or disrespect, all those things that we all have, it cannot bust through an armor that has been fortified by me.
It's wonderful. And it seems to me that those words, that human beings will disappoint you, was a terrific gift.
That's right.
In the sense that you can forgive your mother for disappointing you.
Yes.
Without getting all wrapped up in, she shouldn't have done it,
oh,
what does
yes.
it mean about me, and, you know, all the stuff that stops people, you didn't have to deal with that, because you could say, oh yeah, well, that's no big deal.
She's a human being.
Right, exactly. And so, in a remarkable way, it freed you not to get caught up in what I would have assumed would have happened to a child
yes.
who was so thwarted,
yes.
right?
Yes.
You could just say, oh, well, yeah, right, that's just them. It's not...
I don't take anything personal.
Exactly, exactly.
It's not personal.
What?
We're all on our own journeys. I've messed up.
Oh, no.
Oh, please. I know I've said things that hurt people's feelings. I've done things that, you know, have not showed a great, I did not think through. Okay. There are times when I've had to check my own integrity about what I'm doing and how I'm doing something. I think that when you realize that your own self is still growing, that line where, you know, spirit's not finished with any of us yet, God's not finished with any of us yet, Buddha is us. Okay. When you understand that, no matter what somebody does, you say,
That's their journey.
That's their journey.
I spend my professional life
yes.
essentially spreading this word
yeah.
that you have a responsibility to be the best you, mm-hmm. never mind what they're...
No matter what anybody else is
doing
or saying.
Or doing to you.
Yeah.
Right. And I do think that it's not common enough, mm-hmm. you know?
I do too, and especially now.
Oh, please.
And it gets harder and harder to even do, which means sometimes I find myself, if we have a downside to what I think my life is, I feel more isolated.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so that isolation is coming from the fact that I've had to remove myself from people that I really love and are friends, but the way they see life is so different than the way I see it that it causes a clash. And that clash requires, you know...
Attention.
And it's argumentative, and it's confrontational. And even if I feel like I don't want to do that, there are some that have to do that because they have to be right.
Right.
They can't just say, let's agree to disagree, I love you, let's decide to look at the sunset instead of something else today. And because some people, if they don't make you see that they are right, there can be no peace.
Well, no, that's, again, from the therapist's point of view, this would have to do with their self-esteem, that they can't tolerate, right, because it means something bad about them.
Yes.
Right, and so they're stuck.
So there's that path.
That's right.
Well, if I stay on that path,
right.
I'm going to get there. I'm on your path,
right.
Not mine.
That's right. That's
okay?
Right.
So I like to see I like to feel I'm evolving at all times.
Well, what is clear is that you're committed to evolving.
Committed to evolving.
Right. Forgive me, but it's all we can do
yeah.
is be committed to it.
That's
it doesn't mean we can do it all the time.
No.
Right. But if one has that, then one is doing it more often than someone who's not.
Exactly. Right? But I'm still that the little girl who wants to do more and more and more, and I'm now hearing sometime, I want you to sit down and slow down. And
That may be some of what the book is about.
Yes.
Because exactly. It's a different kind of process, right?
That's exactly what I was getting to. So that is why the book is coming into play now. It is a way of paying attention to my intuition, to what I call the mother God in me, the spirit, and my health.
Yes.
I'm in good health. I mean, I have certain little, I've got a blood pressure issue and a cholesterol issue. But they seem to be much better at this point because of the book.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's right.
Yes.
I'm sure that's right.
So who's taking care of me? The universe is taking care of me.
And it really is, it seems to me, about having internal permission to be yourself. You know, not something that somebody else can give you.
That's right.
That it's an imperative.
Yeah.
Right?
It's an entitlement.
It's an entitlement. It is.
Yeah,
it is.
It's an entitlement. I am entitled.
I know you are.
To be myself. The reason I'm here on this earth was to be myself.
Mm-hmm.
And to evolve into the next self I might be. But I am here because by the very graces that put me here to do all that I'm doing. Even to go through the childhood I went through
to become this.
Yeah, I mean, I was a mother at 16. My son is almost 50 years old.
Oh, my God.
And when I tell you that it's a glorious life, do I have regrets? No. I know people don't believe that. I don't have regrets.
I know.
But I have lots of lessons learned that I will not revisit. No regrets. Do I have complaints? No. Because what am I complaining about?
No, I know.
What would I complain about? That I'm not financially independent? That's not a complaint. That's a desire.
Mm-hmm.
That's a want. And the universe has never let me down. If I'm overdrawn today, I will not be overdrawn a month from now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see?
I do. I understand.
Now, the other people on the other end of that, don't get it when you tell them, don't worry.
It's coming, right?
I mean, I have people that I say to myself, before I leave this world, God, let me pay them back.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not trying to get out of this world without paying them. And I also realize that whenever something good comes, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have no complaints. I have no regrets. I don't think I have delusions either. You know, I know the world we live in, and it's a real world. Matter of fact, it became clear to me when my granddaughter was born just the kind of world we live in, because I'm looking at her wanting to know what her path is going to be like and what's out there for her. And that was the only time, I'd say, those first few months, upon her, the joy of her, was when I could say, I understand worry.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, God, I understand fear. I'm not fearful for myself.
I know.
But I used to be fearful and worried about my son. I spent a lot of time doing that, but I was so young that I didn't recognize it as fear and worry. I was just going to make
fix that path off.
Yeah.
Right.
And make it better.
Right.
And then he became a man, and he had to have a talk with me about that. Okay, Mom, I know you love me, but I'm a man.
Yeah, right.
And I'd have to go, well, you certainly are. Mm-hmm. So he and his wife, I let that go. They belong to their universe. But there's this baby.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
And I am working very, very hard on understanding that just as it was when I was born, or my parents were born, or their parents were born, there will be a way. I was out in L.A. visiting my son,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of young filmmakers
right.
use Indiegogo
right.
to help raise money to make movies.
Right.
Because they're not getting opportunities the way they used to. Mm-hmm. We're not getting grants. We're not. Okay. So my son, I've been working on this book for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So my son said to me, because he said, Mom, when you finish that book, I'm going to turn that into a screenplay. We're going to make a movie out of that. And we had such fun talking about who would play who.
Uh-huh.
So I said, you know, I just want to sit and write this book. Yeah, I said, if I could blink, I would not go back to Sarasota. I would go to old Pasadena, where I like,
mm-hmm.
and sit in that cafe I like over there, or find a place, and I would finish this book. He said, well, how long would it take you? I said, I need 3 months. Because now it's a rewrite. It's reading it and
right,
rewriting.
Right,
everything's there. It's putting the meat in it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, maybe it might take me 6, but I would begin. So my son said, well, Mom, why don't you try Indiegogo?
Right.
I didn't know what Kickstarter was Indiegogo. And we chose Indiegogo because Kickstarter had more rules and regulations, and Indiegogo was simple. And I could do it myself. The only problem I'm having is that now you have to get crowdsource marketing people to help you. Because if not, it's going out to...
Only to your friends.
Yeah, well, it's just going to your friends and your family.
Right, and
people
right.
who love you, but they're not giving.
No. Okay. No, well, they probably can't.
Well, and even if they could,
like, they don't, right.
$10.
Yeah, right.
They're not
right.
going to go through that process.
Right, right.
And they read it differently.
So are there crowdsource marketing
yes,
people?
Yes, there absolutely are. So I'm going to do it again with marketing. Because I realized it clearly when I was home in Boston this past week, and my childhood friend.
Right.
I was coming out the house, and she said, here, take this. And I said, what is this? And it was $40 in her hand. I said, why are you giving me money? Well, you need money. Take it. Just take it. Don't ask. If you need money, you can ask. Just take it. I said, Len, that's not what the Indiegogo thing is about. It supposedly demonstrates their belief and support in the project to help you get it done. That's why, you know, so I've let it go. I'm definitely going to do it, and I'm going to do it again. What I've learned is how to best
maximize it.
Maximize. This one ends in June,
mm-hmm.
and I am going to meet with a marketing person, work it all out, and go at it again.
When do you think you would do it again?
Probably July.
Okay, fine. What we'll do is you'll let me know,
yes.
and then I'll run this in July.
Exactly.
Okay, perfect.
And by then, I will have met with the marketing.
Yeah,
funding marketers, and because that's... They're out there now. This is happening so much. You read about young people raising $61 million.
I know.
They didn't do that with friends and family. That went all over the world.
Yes, very smart.
And
very smart.
That's what I'm going to do. I want to say one thing.
Yeah.
Someone said to me the other day, who works with me here, one of my team members, she said, you know what you are, really? Because we were talking about art and the sculpture and the writing. You know what you are, Gail? You are an observer. You observe people, you observe life, and then after you make your observations, you are a storyteller. And I said to her, that's the best way I've ever heard my life and my work described.
It's a perfect place to stop. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I have no complaints. I have no regrets. One can only speak these words if one is living the life one was meant to live. You can hear in Gail's story that it's not that everything always goes smoothly, or that there aren't any bumps or obstacles or fears. But she can look at her life and say, this is the life I was meant to live, and I am living the hell out of it. I am living this life, which only I could live. This is a person who has not denied herself any aspect of herself. She has embraced her entire self. Everything that she can do, she does do. It hasn't always been easy. It hasn't always been smooth. But it has always been her intention to follow her path. And because Gail has followed her path, the world has benefited tremendously in terms of what she has created and offered to us. I always say at the end of interviews like this, it's hard for me to imagine listening to Gail and not being inspired to wonder if you are living the life you were meant to live, if you are embracing all that you came into this world with, all of the talents you might have had, all of the ideas you might have thought, all of the dreams, the wishes, all of the ways of being. And again, I like to make this point as much as I can. I don't like to forget to say this isn't about being an artist. It's about being who you are. Are you a person who is forthright? Are you a person who is shy? Are you a person who is curious? Are you a person who likes solitude? It doesn't matter. As long as it is who you are, as long as you can look back and say, I have no regrets. I have no complaints. What a remarkable thing to be able to say. So, as always, I hope that you heard something in this show that you can benefit from. Something that amused you, tickled you, inspired you, turned you on. And if there is such a thing and you want to tell me about it, please go to my website, thelinshow.com, and click on the Email Me tab and tell me what you heard in this show that had an impact for you. And if it did, I hope that it's going to bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time. But it ain't over yet, 'cause me and Sister Fiend